Hello and welcome to this episode of Speaking About Speaking. And as you can see, live on the screen with me, I have Matt King. How are you?
I'm all right, Jackie. How are you?
Good. Okay? I'm fine. The countdown is always so long on this thing that by the time I actually get to start talking on the screen, it kind of goes, oh, we're here. Okay.
It's like folk music, and then you're suddenly surprised that someone's answered the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. But Matt, you are here with me today, and I know I've known you for a few years now, really, as the man that sold vows, but also as a friend from You Are the Media. But you are now the general manager of a software development company in Bournemouth. So tell us a little bit about how that came about and what you're looking forward to starting with that.
I'll tell you what, Jackie, I'm looking forward to it because I'll be stepping back from the things that I didn't like in my old job. So I was being swamped. I was doing effectively two jobs for the last 18 months. I was doing the finance role and the general manager role, whilst also dabbling in a little bit of sales. So now, starting Monday, I'm focusing more on the sales and marketing. I'm going to be kind of pushing the branding of the company a little bit more and stepping into the limelight and trying to bring people to the company that I'm going to start working at. I can mention them, right? Yammy App.
Yeah.
I'm going to start working at Yammy App in Bournemouth.
Fabulous. No, I'm sure, and they're very, very lucky to have you, because as we were saying before we went live, you, to me, you are so good at this kind of personal branding stuff, you know, the stuff around really pushing out personality, and you push out your personality in everything that you do, which I think is amazing. But does that come from a sales background? Where does that come from? Because sales is kind of what, you know, your thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so sales is where I kind of found my feet, because if I wanted to take it right back, I think it was being myself in front of clients, and that was kind of my edge. When I was going against competition, I would be myself in front of clients, and I'd build that relationship one-on-one. And then I think at the start of COVID, I just started showing up more online, and I thought, well, there's nothing to lose. So I spoke about this at the You and the Media Lunch Club, like, probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. And it's about self-confidence, just having that no fear of what people think or say about you. And if you're confident enough to show up and be who you are online, then you're going to find your audience. And luckily I have. I don't get many haters, but there are a few, I'm sure.
Well, this is the problem, is if you put yourself out there, you kind of open yourself up to it. But I think, like I tell people that I'm working with when it comes to speaking and showing up, because there's a lot to do, you know, there's a lot of correlation between speaking in front of audiences and your personal brand, because every time you open your mouth, every time you share something, you're putting across your personal brand. And so I'll always sort of say to them, you need to be authentic. You need to be yourself, because you can't get caught out that way. And if you get the haters then, if you get people trolling you or, you know, having a go at you online, then they're not the people that you want on your side, because, you know, if you're being authentically you, then they're not the people that you want as your friends, your clients, your customers.
I like the word congruent. So whatever I say congruent. I'm going to do, I do. And if I say I'm going to act in a particular way, then I will act in that particular way. There is no sort of, I say I'm going to show up on this day, but I never do. And I've really found that with writing a newsletter this year as well. So the last 30, 40 weeks, I've been doing a newsletter and I've been showing up at the same time every single week. And that's also, that really helps build the personal brand. But just following those steps and being congruent to my message really helps put yourself out there, because people know what they're going to get every single time.
Yeah. Yeah, I will come on to the newsletter and the fact that you are so consistent and so creative with what you do. But I want to come on to that. But I'm just wondering, though, because I know you sort of spent some time in the military. You've also done some broadcasting in a previous life kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the military training? Because I would imagine you have to, there's something around courage, isn't there? And actually putting yourself forward into those sort of situations that must build a self-confidence and a self-awareness. Would you agree with that? Is there anything in that?
I tell you what happened, Jackie. When I was at school, I was the shy, timid, I hated standing up in front of the class. I hated reciting English books. I hated being at the front of the class and having to do things. I didn't have very much confidence at school. And then when I joined the army, I remember the day very, very vividly, because it was the day that we all got our haircut and we all had the shaven heads. And then we all went back into the barrack room and we're all sat around just talking. And then it was kind of this level playing field. We all had the same haircut. We're all in the same uniform. There is no difference between any of us. And that's when I kind of felt this confidence of being able to stand up, because you're all the same as me. You've all got the same haircut. You've all got the same uniform. And from that moment on, I didn't have any fear of, I mean, I think it was the comparison, it was the judgment of me thinking that other people were judging me and all this type of stuff. So I think that moment of, we're all in this together, we're all the same, let me stand up and have this conversation in front of all of you. I didn't have any fear after that moment, and I've never looked back. So from that very moment of having my hair cut and being in the same room as all these people, from that moment on, I was able to stand up in front of colonels, generals. I'm able to stand up in front of board of directors now. I'm able to do podcasts like this. I was able to present the radio. So all of those things came from that seminal moment.
Gosh, that's interesting. That's really, really interesting. The fact that you were all kind of put on that level playing field. My husband was in the Merchant Navy from the age of, like, I don't know, 16. And, you know, it was back in the 70s, 80s, whenever it was. And obviously the hair was down to here. And that was a big moment for him. He joined the Merchant Navy because he thought if he went into the Royal Navy, they'd cut his hair off. He thought if he went into the Merchant, they wouldn't cut his hair. And obviously the first day of training, they cut all his hair off. But it's you would almost think it was an opposite, that it once you're the same as everybody else, that somehow you kind of, you fade into the wallpaper kind of thing, that you all look the same and there isn't that individualism. But I can absolutely understand what you mean by that.
So I've been up on stage since that moment. I was up on stage at the Creative Day last year. We were just talking about this before we came on. And what I see now is as human beings. So, and it works in a sales perspective, it works as well. So I can go into a boardroom and whoever I'm talking to, whether it's the CEO, whether it's a technical manager or whoever I'm talking to me, they're just another human being and I'm having a conversation with somebody. A lot of people will build that up in their minds to believe that they have this status or they're, or that there's somebody who should be respected. I don't see that. And I think that's where I'm relatable, because I don't see it. So people don't see it in me. So when I get up on stage, I don't see people as judging me. I just see them as other human beings. And I recognize that if I was in that audience, I know that that person up on stage is also going to be bricking it exactly the same as I am. So yeah. I'm able to empathize with the audience, and the audience is able to empathize with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely it does. It's just, I'm sure there are lots of people out there listening that would kind of think, oh my God, if I was faced with a colonel with all those sort of bits and stripes and everything else, then that would be intimidating. But even in those circumstances, back then when you were that much younger, you didn't feel intimidated?
No, because I just see people as people. And that's ultimately that's all we are. Yeah. And I find that because I'm in a privileged position, I'm in a management position. So people are often, when you're talking to people in your company, people can often be scared to talk to you. So you have to work on the opposite way. So imagine yourself as the colonel and be able to open up the conversation and then continue that conversation and go a few levels deeper than what the superficial answer is, so that you can understand what people are trying to tell you. I think the key word I'm looking for is empathy. You're able to build the relationship both ways. And I think that's what's super important.
Yeah. I mean, funnily enough, I'm just rereading Brené Brown's Dare to Lead. I don't know if you've ever read that. And she starts off talking about speaking, because obviously that's what a lot of what she does now since the sort of incredible TED talk she did. And she talks about just looking out at the audience and seeing human beings, you know, standing up on huge stages, looking out of audiences full of CEOs and other sort of big wigs and VIPs and, you know, all of that, but just seeing them. And it's taken some time to get to that point, but just seeing human beings, seeing the fact that the guy that sat there that runs this company, that company, you know, is going home to his kids, will sit around the table. You know, they are just human beings like us. And I suppose that's kind of the empathy, that the connection you build with an audience as well on a level is
exactly that. Yeah. I've only seen one of Brené Brown's, one of her talks, which was the vulnerability one. That's the only TED Talk I've seen of hers. I've not read any of her books though. So
no, I mean she's done a couple of TED Talks, but yes, she speaks from her own research. So that's what I like about her. She speaks from the knowledge of having done the research, but also she uses her own personality and her own stories to kind of really make her relatable, but also it illustrates the points that she's making. So no, and what she does now is go into companies and talk to leaders about leadership and how you lead in exactly the same way that you've just been talking about is on a level and human to human, which is great.
Exactly.
We've had a comment here from Liam. Let's have a look. I haven't read this yet, so I'm going to put it on the screen. There is almost zero difference between Matt on and off stage. That's a rare quality and definitely makes him a compelling speaker. There you go. Thank you, Liam. And I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely agree. And I think that's another thing that came up in the work that I'm doing with Shelley for the Creator Day. She said that as well, that she'd seen, I think it was Joe Wicks on stage. And she said he is exactly the same on stage and off stage as he is on the YouTube and everywhere else. And I think that's a quality that you've got, Matt. So I think that's really important.
I think it's not a skill that is learnt. I think it's just I wouldn't say I've practiced it. I wouldn't say it's something that comes, would it come naturally? I don't try to be somebody, and that's what, I'm not trying to fake myself on stage. I'm not trying to be louder than I am. I'm not trying to be bolder than I am. And I'm not trying to appear overconfident or underconfident. I'm quite happy. I remember one time I was, you mentioned earlier that I've presented radio. So I remember one time when I was on radio and I couldn't find the button to press the play, or I couldn't remember what I was doing. And I quite openly said on the air, listen, guys, I don't know what I'm doing here. But that raw sense of honesty connected with the audience. And after the show, I went back out and the station manager said to me, at this point, when you've mentioned that frailty and how you're failing, the audience connected with you. Because that's a real rare quality. And this was probably 10, 15 years ago. But just being able to admit that admit your faults and admit that you're going to get things wrong also allows the audience to see that you're not this superhuman person. I'm sure Joe Wicks does that when he's on his Instagram story and he's cooking up his 15-minute meals or whatever.
Yeah. No, absolutely. John Jockham is here. Hello, John. Says, but he's got a great face for radio, though. Yeah, no, I think there's definitely something in that kind of the vulnerability, again going back to Brené Brown, but the vulnerability of being authentic and being honest, that an audience can relate to you because they can see something in you, you know, the qualities that they that might actually be in them as well. You mentioned Instagram there, and I have to say, if you're out there listening and want to join in, then do put in a comment. Now, if you've got any questions for Matt, then do ask them in the comments. And if you're watching on the replay, then that's open to you as well. Do put a comment or ask a question. We'd love to hear from you. So Matt, I remember you being on my podcast when I used to do the recorded version many moons ago, which seems like a lifetime ago now. And at that point, you had a huge presence on Instagram, and I think it was Sales Change, which I think was that your own,
it was
that your own business?
It was my own business. It was something that I started up during lockdown, and it was kind of like a lockdown project where I was doing a bit of consultancy for individuals and small businesses and just helping them grow their business or grow their sales process. Go on, I'll let you finish. Sorry.
No, you finish. You finish. I was just going to make a point about how it looked. It was lovely.
That was all self-taught. So the Instagram stuff was something I started doing during lockdown. And I'm quite a designer. I like creativity. I like the creative side of things. You've probably seen that in some of my Instagram content, my newsletter, my videos. I like the out of the ordinary stuff. I don't like doing ordinary stuff, but the Instagram stuff, I'll be honest with you, Jackie, I haven't posted for about 18 months. And that's all linked to why I've left my job, because I was burning out. I was doing way too much. And I had to focus on what pays the bills. But now I'm now I'm able to breathe a little bit more, and I'm sure most of that will come back. I mean, I've got some videos coming up soon. I've been doing some creative stuff for You and the Media behind the scenes. So, yeah, sometimes some of that has to take a back seat if your job is the main source of income.
Yeah. I mean, it just amazes me how much you do manage to do outside of a working week. Because, the Instagram itself, as I say, you look like a designer. It was slick. I was jealous. I had no idea how you were doing it. It looked brilliant. And also the fact that obviously Sales Change was about you coaching sales and about you talking to people. You had a podcast at that point as well. Is that right?
I did. I had a podcast. Yeah. So the Sales Change brand was born from the podcast. So I started working with Podcast Labs because I wanted to interview local business leaders. And this was scratching the itch of I'm not on radio anymore, so I want to have my voice in front of people. And I had this idea that I was going to interview local business leaders. So the Sales Change podcast started. The You and the Media community got behind that. I did two seasons of that. The second one was a little bit more broadened out. It was interviewing sales coaches out of the US. And then from that, I was designing a lot of stuff around the brand and I was building the Instagram channel. And then the Instagram channel went in a different direction and I started signing clients who wanted me to do their design work. And then because I was doing their design work, my design work, then COVID finished and I was going back to the day job. It's kind of just like it got this big cacophony of all of these avenues of revenue. And I was thinking, oh, this is too much. So I had to cull some of it. Yeah, I enjoy all of that. That's all the stuff that I enjoy.
And you're going to have more scope to do that in this new role.
Yeah. So Rich won't mind me saying, if Rich is listening, but Rich won't mind me saying that they don't do anything on social media. It's not the company is not outward facing at the moment. It's very inward facing. A lot of their work is inbound leads, so there's not a lot of outbound marketing. There's not a lot of outbound sales practices. So I'm going into the company to try and juice that up and give us a presence, really. So that's the stuff I like doing. I like being the face of the business, and I like outward marketing, and I like getting in contact with people and networking.
Yeah. Which obviously I was surprised actually when I spoke to you for my podcast back in the day that you weren't anything to do with You Are the Media before lockdown, that you'd only actually really met Mark on screen during the time when we were all, shut down at home. But you are now sort of a creative mind behind what's going on. So we're both going to be at Creator Day. I am going to show this. I put this out today for me. So this is Creator Day last year. This is me on the stage doing a breathing demonstration. And there's Matt in the wings there, just as you can see, desperate to get on stage. And I think this was the year before, wasn't it? I think it was the year before.
That was the year before, yeah.
Yeah. So this
that
is
was,
you.
And the... That was, yeah, I was yeah. up on stage with Yellow Tuxedo guys, Alan and Emily. And I kind of got roped into a lot of things. Mark was showing all of the videos that I'd created, and it became like a homage to Matt King during that day, which was unexpected but pleasant.
Yes. And then most recently, you were on this panel at a You Are the Media lunch club with the fabulous John Asperian and Amy and Christine Gripman there, talking about personal branding. So we were chatting a little bit before we went live about personal branding for people that are employed, that are part of a bigger organization, and how it is still important that even if you are an employee, that you have your own personal brand. What's
100%. I'm fully behind that. And I had a semi-disagreement with John Jenkins about this, because John was saying that the company should come first. But a company wouldn't exist without its people. And having a personal brand allows you to open up conversations with your clients, open up conversations with prospects. And ultimately, everyone knows the phrase people by people. And it's never been more true now, because the more that you get involved with personal branding, the more that you get involved with the clients, and the more that you're able to promote yourself, the more opportunities you're going to have. And everyone's fighting the same game. So I was in the valve industry. There's not much difference between the two products. So the only differentiator is going to be you. So if you're in front of another client who has also got another person who's trying to sell them a valve, I want them to buy from me. And ultimately, if anything goes wrong, they're going to call me. They're not going to call a switchboard at a company. They're going to ring, pick up the phone and speak to me. So I think having a company which allows you to personal brand yourself allows you to, A, promote the company, which is the most important thing, but B, open up more conversations for you so that you can sell more of the product or service that the company wants you to sell. So I think it's vitally important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this came up for me recently when I was working with a large organization whose marketing and sales teams were in front of, you know, top supermarkets, putting their product on the supermarket shelves. But we were talking to them about personal branding. They needed to, you know, how did they want to come across to the client? How did they want to be seen? And as you say, it's that face that they're going to recognize, that they're going to come back to, not necessarily, you know, the organization. So it is important.
And a great example of this is The Apprentice on BBC One. So the apprentices are all trying to buy to get Sir Alan Sugar to invest in their own businesses, but they're not. Sir Alan Sugar's not judging the business; he's judging the person. So if it was all about the business, then they would just pitch their business ideas and they'd go about their day. But they're not; they're pitching themselves, and that's what we're doing every single day. And that's the easiest analogy that I can give.
Yeah, and I think that's perfect. It is exactly that, and it is so important for people to really be conscious of how they're coming across and how they're speaking to their clients, their customers, their audience. Ultimately, tell me about the videos, because I love your videos. I'm a big fan of watching you on your adventures over wherever you might be, with drones and skateboards and everything. So how did that come about, and how do you use that, or do you use that as a way of pitching your own personal brand?
It was something that came up at the personal branding day, and someone said, how did you elevate your personal brand, or what was the starting point? And honestly, the starting point, you mentioned all the sales chain stuff, you mentioned the Instagram stuff. But the real biggest growth that I got was when I started posting my vlogs. And I was vlogging the most mundane stuff. Like, I went to a suit fitting for a business event, and then they didn't have the suit in stock and I didn't have the trousers. And I was making a drama out of it. I was trying to get people to understand that, listen, I'm 24 hours before an event and I haven't got any trousers, and I'm rushing around trying to find trousers. So I went to Moss Bros and got some. So all of this type of stuff, it was just trying to find, it was kind of me trying to practice storytelling. And one of the biggest inspirations, that is no lie, is Casey Neistat, who's a huge YouTuber in across the world. A lot of his videos follow a same kind of storytelling format, which is the beginning, middle, and end. And that's what I was trying to do, but with my own life. I was having people coming up to me at that business event saying, oh, you managed to get your trousers, because they'd seen the video that I put out. And that kind of then really resonated with me, that people were coming up to me and realizing that my content meant something to them. And then I was getting calls from my team in France saying that people had come up to them at an exhibition in France saying, oh, is Matt King on this stand? Because we want to meet him. And then I had people calling me from America saying, oh, I've seen you riding your electric skateboard. Because I posted a video online about me riding an electric skateboard to work. All of these things all kind of meshed together. And every time I was meeting a client, they were asking me about something that happened in a video, or they were asking, have you got your electric skateboard with you? I had that two or three times when I was in America. So I think video is the most powerful medium, because you recognized all of my design stuff that I was doing on Instagram, but no one can relate more than a video, because a video really, I was trying to show it from my eyes, and people really bought into that. So they're super special, my little videos. I enjoy them really a lot. I like putting them together as well.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's the creativity, isn't it? There's something about the editing. That was the one thing in lockdown that I decided I would definitely come out of lockdown knowing how to edit a piece of film, which I do just about.
I'm impressed with StreamYard. You're doing really well with this stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, yes, I love a bit of StreamYard. But, I mean, where did this podcast come from. The podcast started from that Zoom screen back in 2020 when we had Joseph Jaffe there and you were hosting the learning part of the You Are the Media. And yeah. It was like, I want to be a podcast. How do I do it? And here I am, like 4 years later, nearly.
I remember still that.
Doing
yeah.
it. So yeah.
And the learning was your idea, Jackie, wasn't it? That was your idea.
Yeah, Mark keeps saying that. I'm not sure though. I'm not sure how I managed that.
It was.
Yeah, I'll take it. We've got John Espirian has just put, I see you both. Great to share the stage with Matt again in Pool coming up in April. And Mark, Matt's vids in lockdown were something else. So yeah. Yeah,
Those little videos I did for You and the Media were fun.
Yeah. Well, people are, I mean, this is the thing with this kind of, and I've gotten so used to doing, I mean, this obviously is animated because it's live and it's, you know, even the recorded podcast, it's dynamic, there's stuff going on. Whereas I have got into the habit of social media posts of just being static, of just being pictures, like your Instagram was, you know, as beautiful as they looked, they are just very static. And so I'm now trying to get more into video. I've got a TikTok account. I'm kind of putting stuff up there. But it's something that people find really scary. It more scary than actually writing down their thoughts is actually filming them having thoughts. So
you're going to ask me a secret, aren't you?
No, I have no secret. But I have, you know, if you have a secret, tell me. But if there is some advice you can give anybody that's starting out.
I remember my first ever video, and it was an Instagram live after, I think it was after a Year of the Media event. And I said I'd go on and talk about, I can't even remember what it was about, but I remember going live for the very first time on Instagram. And in front of me, you would never see. So at the moment, you're on my MacBook, which is on a chair, which is in front of me, and I'm in my lounge. But when I did my first Instagram live, I had a clothes horse in front of me. I had five pieces of paper in front of me with the five topics that I wanted to talk about. And then I had my phone set up on a tripod and I had all the doors shut so that nobody could come in. Now, if my kids came in, it would be fine because I'm able to cope with all of those distractions and I'm able to do all that type of stuff. But I was so nervous about what I was going to say, how I was going to say it, that, and I'm saying this because you see my videos now and they look natural. They look like I'm quite comfortable in front of a camera. But the very first one I did, I was very rigid, and I think it's still on my Instagram, but I was very rigid and I was trying to get through the topic because I wanted to talk as if it was a presentation. But without doing that, I couldn't have got to the stage now where I do a vlog. And actually, I think I was brushing my teeth in one of the vlogs and all this type of stuff and all the things that people go, no, you can't do that in front of camera. I try to do the things that I can't do, that people say you can't do. And I remember I did a post on Instagram one time where I asked people to comment on my Instagram stories about the things that you can't do on camera. So it was, I think somebody said that you can't eat a donut, you can't do your hair whilst you're on camera. So I tried to do all these things at the same time. So I tried to eat a donut whilst brushing my hair, whilst trying to do this Instagram live. And then you realize how stupid it is because you can do all these things. It's just your own mind playing tricks on you and saying, no, you can't. And we've all got this image of being corporate. We've all got these images of... Yeah. This straight-laced person in front of a camera, like talking head, this is our company, this is how we, and that's not how the world works, and that's how you're never going to build a rapport with anybody if you're trying to be perfect on camera. It just doesn't work that way.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, perfection doesn't exist at all, and people Correct. Shouldn't aim for it, you know, because people can't relate to somebody when they're not being authentic. They're not being themselves. They're trying to be someone that they think everybody else expects them to be. And that's not the way to do it. I was going to mention John Espirian baking a cake, because when he was on the panel, he was talking about, you know, when you start baking a cake, it might be rubbish, but in a year's time, I think that was the analogy, John. Let me know. In a year's time, you'll be baking beautiful cakes. But John here says, don't worry about clothes horses or anything else. Everyone's first video tends to be awful. And mine certainly was. So thank you for that, John.
And mine.
Yeah. Well, we are coming to the end of our half an hour, Matt. And I knew that would...
That's flown by, Jackie.
I know. It has flown by. And it's been great. I knew it would be an interesting and insightful conversation with you. But I'm going to ask you what I ask everybody else at the end of this live is, what makes a good speaker good and a bad speaker suck, in your opinion?
What makes a good speaker good would be volume, pace and tone. So you've got to have volume. If people can't hear you, there's no point in talking at all. So pace and tone and making people interested. I told this story on my newsletter a couple of weeks back, but there was one English teacher when I was at school that I still remember now. His name was Mr. Bonyface. He was a PE teacher. And I only remember him because of how he spoke, because he used to boom. He used to have a different range. He used to go very deep than very like normal speaking. But he used to use volume in such a way that you would pay attention to him. So I would say all of those points for a good speaker. What makes a bad speaker bad? I went to my son's school yesterday, and I watched. He's 8 years old. So they were given this presentation on ancient Egypt, and every single kid, because they did this PowerPoint presentation, every single child, bar all of them, all stood and faced the screen. So I think if you're trying to do a presentation, remember what's on the screen behind you, use it as a prompt, but face the audience and make sure that you're facing the audience. Because if you're turning around and facing the screen constantly, you're showing that the screen is more important than the people in front of you.
Well said. Totally agree. Totally agree. It's one of my big bugbears. Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Well, thank you. I'm going to show here where everybody can come and find you. This is your own website, Matt. Is that right?
So this is my own website.
I'm mattking.com. So what's on that website and what can people find if they go there?
You've got all of my videos. So all of my videos are uploaded there, and you've got links to my YouTube channel if you want to go and find like some of the video podcasts that I've done. You've got all of the podcasts that I've done. So I did the Sales Change podcast, got both seasons of that. And I did a series with Ricky Locke and Alan Braithwaite called Three Men And. They've got all of those podcasts on there. And then you've got also got my newsletter, which is The Clique. And that comes out every Tuesday, and you can subscribe on imattking.com/subscribe.
Fabulous, fabulous. I must go back and watch some of those of you with Ricky and Alan Braithwaite. I bet they are fun. I bet they were fun to do.
They were, yeah. They're 2 or 3 years old now. It's crazy how time flies.
Yeah, again, that was a lockdown thing, wasn't it?
I think it was just after lockdown, yeah. We had this idea that we would do three men on a podcast together, and then it just kind of turned into this passion project. I think we only did 6 or 8 episodes, but it was super fun when we did them.
Yeah. Great fun. Great fun. Excellent. Well, yeah, as I say, if you're out there listening and you'd like to go and find out more about Matt, or if you want to watch, if you're watching the replay, then do leave a comment or a question and we'll get back to you. And if you want to find out more about me, then you can go to powertospeak.co.uk, and you can also put a / newsletter on there and go and find my newsletter too. So that's us. So thank you very much, Matt, for being here. We didn't get to talk about your fabulous newsletter, which, again, the consistency you have of putting stuff out is brilliant as well. So it's congruence and consistency and creativity.
Three C's.
Oh, there's loads of C's. But yeah, those are good ones. So I have to say, we'll say goodbye to Matt, but I am off now for 2 weeks. So there won't be a live podcast next week or the week after, unless I can work out how to put in a recorded version. But, you know, I'll let you know. But thank you very much for being here, Matt. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I will see you, if I don't see you before, I will see you at Creator Day in April in Poole. So see you
then. Thank you, Jackie.
Bye.